Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi, whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
Now, I'm still going on a little bit with this thing of Taoism. And for those of you who are not familiar with it, Taoism, not the Taoism of today, but the one that was extant 2,500 years ago, when Lao Tzu, the old philosopher, was in his prime. And he wrote this little book. You know, he was an old man and wanted to leave the province. He wanted to leave China. So he left his little town and got to the gate to leave China, and they stopped him. And because the king didn't want him to go. And so they said, you know, everybody who leaves China has to pay a tax. And he didn't have any money. So they asked him, would he please write his philosophy? So he came back and he wrote this little book of 5,000 Chinese characters, which is called the Tao Te Ching, or the Canon of Reason and Virtue. And it is one of the most translated books in the world. It is a very succinct, and one should make an effort to read it. Yeah, quite something. If you're going to read it, get Paul Karras' translation. Anyway, we are at this little chapter in it called What Can Be Done? And he says, who by unending discipline of the senses embraces unity cannot be disintegrated. By concentrating his vitality and inducing tenderness, he can become like a little child. By purifying, by cleansing, and profound intuition, he can be free from faults. Who loves the people when administering the country will practice non-assertion. Opening and closing the gates of heaven, he will be like a mother bird, bright and white and penetrating the four quarters. He will be unsophisticated. He quickens them and feeds them. He quickens but owns not. He acts but claims not. He excels but rules not. And this is called the profound virtue. Well, we did some of that last week and the week before on this one. Yeah? Now, a thoughtful person, the one who gives thought to himself and to his surround and to, you know, and he sees himself in situations, and then he begins to look for reasons as to why something is happening to him, and for causes of this and causes for that, you know. He finally comes to a very great question. What is the purpose of life? Why are we alive, and what for? What is this all about, this that we find ourselves in? What is it all about? Now, as long as there have been intelligent human beings, human beings have asked this question. I find myself in this situation, what is it all about? Without the conjuring up of reasons that somebody else maybe has given you, or your fantasies is to try to make the situations come out all right, you know. But the philosophies and the systems of religion are born in and around this particular question. What is the purpose? Well, you know, we do think up a lot of answers. We have got aims, we have got goals, we have got ambitions, and then there is sex, and then there is money, and there is power, and there is prestige. Are they really purposes? Huh? I mean, supposing, you know, how can I put that? So somebody decides that sex is the big thing, and this is the thing about living. Huh? They enjoy it, and so they overemphasize it. And then when it's all said and done, what was the purpose? Huh? The purposes. Or say it's money, or say it's power, or I've got to have prestige and respect. People have got to look up to me. Then I can cope with the world. As long as I'm on this little pedestal with everybody looking up at me, then, you know, so I do everything in my life for this purpose. And again, when it's all said and done, so what? Huh? The purposes and goals that we have every day. You know, I want a new dress, I want a new suit, I want a new house, I want a new car, all that sort of thing. You know, these purposes and these goals, they are derived from the world which we see and we hear. And you know, it's a relative world, the world with which we have relationship. Out of this, we make certain goals, you know. And we pivot then ourselves around the purposes which we have conceived by our observations of out there. And we have goals that are based on the necessities of living. And these are necessary. Let's not fool ourselves, huh? See, on one hand, our goals and our purposes are necessary. How else are you going to eat? Or have a roof over your head? Or buy that new dress or that new suit? But along comes this old slant-eyed heathen Chinaman, you know, and he says, he who lives with a purpose not only does not achieve his ends, but he also loses his life. And didn't Jesus say something very similar to that? 500 years later. But now this no purpose thing is very difficult for the mind to grasp. The thinking mind exists in goals, with goals. If for one day only, that's all you could do it, you decided that you would not center your mind on any goal for one day. No goal. Yeah. What do you think would happen to your mind? Can you do it for 5 minutes even? No goal? Well, see? So the thinking mind has a tremendous difficulty trying to grasp this. No reward, no purpose. But I gotta eat. Fine. Of course you do. And there is a purpose in eating. It sustains the body. Without a body, then what do you got? I don't know. Anyway, I think, too, that we should remember to view the mind as if it were, as if it had two aspects. There is this aspect of the relative phenomenal world, which is it's dualistic, it's competing, and it's opposing. And then there is the other aspect of the mind which has none of these. It doesn't compete. It doesn't oppose. It's not relative to anything. It's not dualistic. It's just mind. Mind. And because it has no thing in it, it is called empty mind, or sometimes no mind. But it is mind itself. Now, to try to comprehend our existence, our daily existence, with a relative view is necessary. As I say, we must survive. And not only that, we can look at it as a kind of a training and a discipline. We're learning to cope with ourselves. Learning to cope with the oneself in this relative world is quite an accomplishment. With our thinking mind, you know, we come upon answers. We do arrive at answers. But if you will look, if you look at the answer, you look at the question, you look at the answer, and then you will see that whatever answer you have arrived at, it is not very long, and it brings up another question. And so the basic question, the fundamental question, has never really been answered. For instance, you know, what I said a little while ago about your original face. Well, you can sit and figure that and figure that and figure that. And finally you come back, well, the face before my father and the face before my grandfather and the face before my great-grandfather and the face before Adam and Eve. Oh, now I know. It's God. Do you really think you have an answer? No. That you're still thinking. When you are asked such a question, you must come and show that original face to somehow present it so that it can be known by someone else who has seen that face also. And people, they ask questions like, oh, I wonder who created the earth. Well, one could say, A created the earth. Usually we say God created the earth. But this morning, let's substitute, and we'll just say A created the earth. A. What is A? A created the earth. Well, then, if A created the earth, who created A? And you come to, well, maybe B, but B couldn't, B comes after A. So you begin to figure, and you know, pretty soon you come to some kind of answer, and then after a while, well, who created that? And who created that? And on and on and on, back into yourself, but it's still the same question. You know, in I think it's symbolic logic that they have this. If the many return to the one, to what does the one return? Did I get that right? You're okay. If the many, sometimes I want to get the zero in there someplace, which is not the answer. if the many return to the one. I mean, the many have all come from the one. Huh? One, whatever you want to call it. Many have come from the one. And so the many return to the one. To what does the one return? Well, anyway, what is the purpose of life? And in our daily living, every day, we come up with an assumption. There must be a purpose of why else am I here? There must be a purpose. We have just simply accepted this within ourselves, true or not. We have just accepted this. And we can say, well, my purpose is so-and-so. My purpose is to find God. My purpose is to bring up my children. My purpose is to get married and have children. My purpose is to get through school. You know? Dealing with careers and businesses and avocations. Then, of course, we have got aims. But we must remember it is part of the relative world. It's part of the phenomenal world. But in the noumenal world, what is the purpose? No answer. And if you really sit with this and say no answer, and do it enough, you will find that no answer destroys the question. Then you're free. Bodhidharma, you know, he came from India to China, and it must have been, they say, a very long journey because they didn't have the transportation that long ago that they have now. He came in about 600, let us say. Bodhidharma was the 28th in line after the Buddha, who had received the transmission outside the scripture. Yeah. So, and they call him the patriarch, the 28th patriarch, and he came to China. And he was lecturing around and about. He found this Chan Taoistic thing there, and, you know, he liked that too. And there was an emperor who decided this was a very fine man, and he would help him. So he built temples for him. He built some monasteries for him, and he urged the people to go and listen to this man and to become his students. So after a few years of this, the emperor came to Bodhidharma, and he said, all these things I have done for you. And when I die, what merit will I have? And Bodhidharma looked at him and said, none. No reward. I shook him. I mean, all this work he had done so that after he died, he would have great reward. And he said, but you have come all the way from China, from India, to this country. Such a long, arduous journey. I think it took something like 9 years, you know. And he was an old man already. He was like 89. If there is no merit to come, well, why are you doing all this? And Bodhidharma, this is an old famous thing, you know. Bodhidharma looks at him and says, oh, the cypress tree in the garden. And the emperor looked at him and he said, who are you anyway? You know, these silly answers. You know, who are you? Bodhidharma looks at him and says, I don't know. That's Bodhidharma's Zen. Those three questions and answers should be known. No purpose. Now, no purpose And the way I am referring to it is a state of consciousness. It's not something you can think. It is a state of consciousness. Huh? Yeah? And this you should realize about yourself. That part of you that has no purpose. Because, you know, in this phenomenality, all the questions, you know, all the efforts to explain yourself to yourself, you know, this basic question remains. And we have been taught, rightfully so, that there should be an aim in life. There's a goal. You know, some people say, well, they live to serve, or they live for the sake of truth, or they live for God. And they say to us, do not make the mistake of living for the sake of living. And Lao Tzu says, why not? Why not live for the sake of living? The road that we travel on from our when the time we're born to old age, this journey that we make, what is its destination? Now, really, now not some fantasy that you have concocted. What is its destination? It is very difficult for the intellect to grasp the fact that this journey itself is its own destination. At this moment, not a thing is lacking. All you have to do is see the perfectness in yourself. There is nothing lacking. But when we don't realize ourselves, we create destinations. And so we create them. Look at the goals you have set for yourself. You know, we get off in a corner by yourself and look at them a little bit. What is the purpose of the destination you have created? And supposing you arrived at that, what happens next? There would be another one, and another one, and another one. We make all kinds of destinations and put them in different clothes. And our goals, you know, they're always in the future. Even if it's only 5 minutes from now. But the effort of thinking about the goal, of creating the goal itself, of creating this destination, the effort is in this present moment. Even though you say, I haven't got it now, so I'll have it 5 years from now. But there is this effort now. You know, a child goes to school and it struggles with mathematics, or it may struggle with English or whatever, And the child knows that he's going through all this stress of learning so that he may derive some benefit later on. He passes the examinations, and then he's told, well, now you're ready to face life's struggles. Are you? I don't think I was. I don't think passing an examination like that gave me the key to the whole thing. No. But at the same time, you know, a child can be very aimless. Some children are, you know. They'd like to lead an aimless life. They're going to play all the time. And a child has to be led out of an aimless life and to be given some aims and some ambitions. And all of our methods of education are toward this. Yeah? And it's necessary. How else is the young adult and later the adult going to become a part of the society in which he lives? Yeah. If he can't become a part of the society in which he lives, then he will fail in the struggle for survival of the fittest, which is, you know, the law. The law meaning the way it operates, the way it functions. That's how society functions. And you're either with society or you're a dropout. And Jesus said to his disciples, why do you worry about your daily bread? Look at the flowers. Look at the birds. They do not have the means, nor do they worry, and yet they are fed. Look at the lilies of the field. Even King Solomon cannot come anywhere near them for beauty and majesty. And they just are themselves. I wonder what we would look like if we were just ourselves. But again, Jesus is talking about a state of consciousness also. Where there is no purpose of just being. But we're human beings, yeah. And we can't be left like the lilies in the field, you know. We cannot gather grain like the birds. And we should remember that we have taken responsibility for ourselves. Adam and Eve did this for us a long time ago when they made the choice to eat the apple. See? Free will. You're responsible. So man then is in a... He has entered into a world of struggle that's very different than the rest of nature. Because man alone can say, I am responsible. Somehow, if we look at ourselves, we know, way down deep inside, that we endow life with the aims and the goals, and that life itself. You know, but we try so hard to do this, we even give the purposes and things to dogs and cats, and the birds, and even the flowers. We say, well, they're doing this because, and we have a nice reason for it. So society and the intellect aims, yes. But life itself, no. Each moment of life, each moment of life is an end in itself. Each now, in a continuum, now. Now is the day of the Lord. Now understand that. To be in that now, to be in this present moment, now is the day of the Lord. It's complete in itself. Wherever you are, whatever you are, in this now is the fulfillment of life. Because it is life. If we could just be now. Now, if you're only living in your thoughts about the goals and thoughts about tomorrow, then you miss living today. Every tomorrow becomes today. If you're in the habit of sacrificing today, then the whole of your life will be sacrificed. Because tomorrow in its way never comes. Not more than a single moment. That's what you have. This now. This moment. Now, can you live for this moment itself? And now, this doesn't mean, I'm not saying that you can't look at a timetable for a plane or a train that you're going to take tomorrow. And it doesn't mean that you have to drop all the projects, even if it's going to take 6 months or 6 years to bring them to completion, you know, that you shouldn't make any arrangements today. You should. But whatever decision you are making about that project or about that trip, realize you're making it now. But your decision belongs to this moment. This moment is when you're making the decision. So take as much pleasure and as much interest in this decision as is possible. Well, I'm going to do it tomorrow, so the effort is going to be tomorrow. It isn't. The effort is now. To make a decision can be pleasurable. Now, so you enjoy the decision that tomorrow morning you will get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Right? Yeah? And that's the complete thing. This is your decision. Yeah. Then tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock, you get up, and this is this moment. And you have the pleasure of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then you get on the plane or the train, and you don't sit there worrying about what's going to happen when you get off, all these future anxieties. There was a sign down on Escondido Boulevard about people who worry, sweep a lot of smoke. Don't let this very moment slip by because of your anxieties about something that's never going to happen. No. To become one with this moment is to become one with oneself. To become one with oneself is to become one with life. The people talk about unity. You know, they're going to have this unity with God or unity with the universe. Well, first you have to come and make a unity with yourself. And that's now. And I'm not saying to live now is not to plan for the future. To live now simply means that there is more than your thinking. See, there is more than your anticipation. There is more than your worry. Something more. Something in which all of this anticipation, worry, and so on, is taking place. So you're worrying about all the little parts, and there's the whole. Well, anyway. There's all kinds of different people, you know. There's a type of person that lives an aimless life, you know. He's thrown here and thrown there, and he's dulled by apathy, and he goes wherever life pushes him, you know, and he doesn't take existence into his own hands. In other words, he's saying, I don't want to be responsible. And he's like a dead leaf that's blown hither, thither, and yon. And then on the other hand, we see a person who is always on the run to attain a goal, you know. He's always investing today for tomorrow. And he spends his life in pursuits. And now Lao Tzu says there's another type. One who is neither lazy nor obsessed. He doesn't run from life, nor is he just a dull blob. See? When this type of person, this third type of person, runs, it is not to achieve something, because he's with himself. Each step that he takes is just joy. He's with himself. He lives each moment in its fullness. And then in the long run, he doesn't regret that his life was spent in vain and that he didn't reach all his goals. Because some of the goals we have are kind of silly, too, aren't they? This third type of man accepts what comes before him and he lives it. This is what was given him. You know, today there's a fad. You know, people get up in the morning early and they go jogging or they go walking, you know. You get out there and you say, well, I'm going to go once around the track. No, I'll go twice around the track. No, I'll go three times around the track. You know, you've got a goal right away. You know, I need to get around this thing three times today. Not only that, I need to do it in such and such a manner, you know. I'll walk once and jog twice, you know. We set up all these goals, huh? Now, supposing you did it, you got out there, and you walked as if you felt like walking, or you jogged if you felt like jogging, and when you didn't feel like jogging anymore, you walked. And if you didn't feel like that, you just went home again, you know. If you just walk for the sheer pleasure of walking, because you're walking with yourself and nothing in between, then your step is light and springy and you're really going around there, huh? Yeah. The very act of walking is enough. Now, the joy of this kind of walking, you know, that you experience in the morning like this, is very different. See, you go out and do this, and then you come home and you get a shower and comb your hair and makeup or shave or whatever, and then you go to the office and you park the car and then you walk up the sidewalk to the door to the office. Very different kind of walk than you did early in the morning. Very different. Now I'm going to the office. You've got a purpose. Walking in the morning was just walking, and it was marvelous. I'm going to the office. There's a difference. See? And then you come home at night, and you feel, well, pretty good, you know. At least the task I set for myself today is completed, and I lasted out the day, you know. Now I'm home. Now what can I do? We look around for something else, which is very different than if there's something there that you're really interested in doing. Then you would just go and do that. Or maybe you're tired and you eat. Well, you eat hoping it'll get rid of your tiredness, you know, which is different than sitting down and saying, oh boy, look at this food, huh? This is great, I'm going to eat. And then you're with yourself when you eat. And that's quite an experience. Yeah, you know, we make a burden of so many things, huh? And life gets so heavy for us. Yeah. Somehow or another, it gets to be just something to be gotten through, one way or another. And that's not the gift of life, is it? We change everything into a task, and we forget all about the play. You know, life is very dynamic energy, and there's play in it, there's joy in it, there's delight in it. The birds play. You watch them, they have a marvelous time. They come to our little pool, and they bathe, and they sit up in the tree and do this again, and they go back in the moon, you know, and the cat sits there and looks at them, you know. She's playing, too. But we even make our leisure a chore. You know, for instance, people play cards. Now, if there's no money involved, do you still enjoy the cards? And we turn love into an assignment. You know, I have my duties to do as a householder. Can't you just enjoy it? Can we be here now? Where we actually are now? Forever the mind rambles. Watch it. It's doing it right now. You know, and it's like, supposing you decided to go one day out, I'm going to really enjoy my leisure today, so you go to the river. And you're walking along the river, and all of a sudden, you become aware that somebody's drowning out there. What do you do? Well, you're going to save him. And finally, being nobody else is around, you don't think, you don't see anybody, so you jump in and save him. And the thought doesn't go through your mind as to saving him because it's your duty, or you don't think, is he the same religion I am? You know? Is he somebody pretentious, you know? No, you just go save. You do. And when you do it that way, just the doing, there's a joy in it. Yeah? But then we get him up on the bank and the man is safe, and all of a sudden we skip over this joy because his mind begins again, and we say, will he be grateful? Huh? Will it be in all the newspapers? Huh? How many people witness my performance? Huh? How we fool ourselves. Yeah. Now, just to act, did you really want a reward from him? Or did you just save him? Can you do just for the sake of doing without a reward? Yeah. To plunge yourself into your life, into your actions, just for the sake of the act. Yeah, then you will know life. Because life itself is not a goal. It's living you. Don't make something else out of it. Life having, shall we say, produced you is quite an accomplishment in itself. What is there to achieve outside of that? You're going to make it a bigger life? No, you can improve your mind, improve your vocabulary, improve yourself so that you can understand some of this process, but make it a bigger life? This tremendous, invisible something that lives you. So the question really shouldn't be why, you know. It should be how. How shall I live this gift? Anyway, Lao Tzu says, in the opening and the shutting of his gates of heaven, cannot he do so like a female bird? Well, the masculine mind, the male mind, works in a particular manner. The feminine or the female mind works in an entirely different fashion. This is why they never seem to understand each other. Male mind, the masculine mind, is aggressive. It's objective. And I am not referring particularly to a man when I say masculine aspect of the mind. Masculine type of mind is aggressive. And one way to go about doing things is to be aggressive about them. So then if you're doing that, then you know that you are using the masculine aspect of your mind. It's characteristic. Now, there is another type, the other aspect of the mind, psychological, speaking, that's not aggressive. It does things very patiently, and it waits, and it is non-aggressive. It is very receptive, and it is subjective. See? She accepts. That's a characteristic. These are natural attitudes, either the aggressiveness or the acceptance. And Lao Tzu says, you know, become like a female bird if you want to know this invisible that is holding you there. And in India, there was a Swami at one time who said there are two types of doors. One is aggressive and one is receptive. And, you know, I told you the story here some time ago about the man that went to the therapist so that he could relate his dreams to him. And one morning he got there and he told this therapist in the dream he had worked all night. He had struggled and worked all night pushing at this door. And he did everything he could and this door wouldn't open. And he pushed and he pushed and he pushed at this door. Because he knew that if he could get that door open, all of his hopes and his dreams would come true. So all night long he worked and he worked and he worked, pushing this door. And so the therapist said, well, now tell me something about this door that you were pushing. And the man said, well, you know, it was an ordinary door. It was wood and it was stained, but it, you know, wasn't painted and had a little sign on it. And the therapist says, oh, what about the sign? Tell me something about the sign. Well, I didn't pay too much attention to it because I was so, you know, I really wanted to push. He says, okay, in your mind, you go back and look, what did the sign say? The sign said, pull. Huh? Yeah. Let it come. Just let it come. Don't keep pushing everything away from you. Let it come. Life will come too. Yeah. Now, this aggressiveness, you know, some women develop the use of it. Yeah. It is a kind of an attitude toward life. And when it's found overly done in a woman, we find a very aggressive, competitive, hard, cold female. You see them in business lots of times. And in the annals of analysis, it is called an anima-ridden female. She's got a conflict within herself that needs to be taken care of. Which is not to say we don't act both ways. A man can be very soft and receptive, and he should be. And there are times when a woman should be very objective. I mean, if your kids are doing something wrong, you're going to be aggressive and save them, aren't you? Yeah, so what's wrong with it? Except, do not go overboard in either direction. So observe the way you act, how you are acting. And then Lao Tzu says, after observing, you let go. You just relax with yourself. And you let things happen. You don't have to be hasty. And don't be insistent on a particular type of result. There are things in the picture that you do not see. Yeah? Cultivate the ability to accept. Keep your doors swinging both ways, you know, and be happy with what you are. That's a good place to begin, isn't it? Be happy with what you are. Do not make an enemy of existence. Have an inner feeling of some friendliness toward life. And this is the female bird. Huh? She feeds, but she doesn't own. When the true wisdom appears, is it necessary to keep the arrogance of wisdom? If one were really wise, would one have to proclaim all the time how much one knew? One can begin to know wisdom and can become aware that one's knowledge of it is only a handful of water from an infinite ocean that you can never grasp with your hand. The totality of it. You can be it, but you can't grasp it. There was a very famous sophist. He was a debater at one time, in the time of Socrates. You know, Socrates was our great educator. He was the one who always questioned. And in questioning, you know, educate means to draw out what is in you here. If you draw it out so that you can see it, draw it out and make it objective, you would know who you were. You would know what life is. Educate. And in our Western world, Socrates, they call him the father of education because this was his method to question. And he always said, you know, I don't know anything, you know, and then he would run around question. And he claimed that he was ignorant, so this gave him the right to question. If I don't know, I can certainly ask, can I? Sure. But people were very troubled with his behavior because he did ask some very funny questions, like he would ask, what is life? You know. And they were afraid of meeting him on the street because he might corner them, you know. And then the crowd would gather right away because people would see, oh, Socrates has got somebody over there. Let's go see what he's got to say, huh? And then all of a sudden, you know, it was very embarrassing because, you know, as soon as you opened your mouth, then all of a sudden I knew that I didn't know as much as I was pretending to know. Yeah. If no one questions you ever, you just go happily about your business with all your illusions, huh? Yeah. And if somebody does question you, well, how come you know that, or how come you think you know that, or why do you think that, or how come you got that opinion? You know, if somebody does question you, we got trouble in River City. Right? Yeah. Anyway, this man came to Socrates, and he said, there is nothing absolute in this world. Nothing is independent. Nothing is perfect in this world. Neither man, nor his doctrines, nor his truths. Now, this is the sophist speaking. So Socrates looked at him, and then he asked him, is your statement completely true? Completely and wholly true? And, you know, this sophist who, you know, is really into this thing now with this argument, you know, and so he forgot, you know, himself a little bit, as one does when one is arguing, you know, and he didn't realize it. He got caught in his own words, and he says, this is wholly and totally true, what I say. See? So Socrates says, I have nothing more to say to you. I leave you to think about it for yourself. See? And, you know, it's a very funny thing. This sophist is not alone in the world. No. How often do we catch it? Are we really that knowledgeable about ourselves? No. You know, in asserting, this assertion, you know, this is the thing. This is the hook that we're hooked on. Huh? In asserting the completeness of anything, you know, in our aggressiveness, we forget that life is very mysterious. And it's full of wonder. And it's full of awe. This sophist, you know, he is saying on one hand, no truth is perfect, and yet he is saying what he is saying is wholly true. Yeah. And we take a stance, and we assert that this is something and so on, and we forget about the opposite side of it, you know. Truth can only be that which encompasses both sides of the coin. So we have an attitude of acceptance, and which is an invitation to living. And it is then a preparation to becoming wise in our ignorance. And he who has courage for this does attain the ultimate of life. Life itself is its ultimate, huh? And the whole treasure of the mystery is always open to him. You must be very tired of sitting. And now, may the peace and the power that passeth all understanding hold us and keep us in the love of the Christed consciousness while we are seemingly separate one from another. And I thank you very much.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.